President, Mrs. Köhler, President of the Bundestag, Federal Chancellor, President of the Bundesrat, President of the Federal Constitutional Court, ladies and gentlemen, dear guests, I stand before you today as President of the State of Israel, the home of the Jewish people. And in my delegation, there are survivors of the Holocaust and representatives of the future generation of the State of Israel. And while it breaks my heart to think of the atrocities of the past, I also look to the common future of a world of young people, a world with no room for hatred, a world in which the words war and anti-Semitism no longer exist. Ladies and gentlemen, in our ancient Jewish tradition, there is a prayer in the Aramaic language spoken to commemorate the dead in memory of fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters. This prayer, which is more than 1,000 years old, was neither the mothers whose infants were taken away from them, nor the fathers who cast a last look at their children before they were herded into the gas chambers, nor were the children able to listen to it, the children who dissolved into smoke in the crematoriums. It is important to me, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Jewish people, to recite the first verses of the Kaddish prayer here and now, honoring and remembering the 6 million Jews who were turned to ashes. Glorified and sanctified be God's great name throughout the world, which he has created according to his will. May he establish his kingdom in your lifetime and during your days, and within the life of the entire house of Israel, speedily and soon. Say amen. His name shall be blessed everywhere. The prayer ends with the following words, which in the State of Israel have become the symbol of the Jewish dream. He who creates peace in his celestial heights, may he create peace for us and all of Israel. Say amen. My friends, representatives of the German government and people, thank you. Fewer and fewer survivors of the Holocaust live among us in the State of Israel and everywhere in the world. The numbers are constantly decreasing, and at the same time, there are still people living on German soil in Europe and elsewhere in the world who back then pursued the most terrible of aims, genocide. I appeal to you, do everything in your power to make sure that those criminals receive their just punishment. In our view, it's not about revenge. It is about education. The younger generation lives in merciful times. The young people must remember. They must not forget, and they must know what happened. They must never, ever believe in anything else or set goals other than peace, reconciliation, and love. On this day, this International Day of Remembrance for the Victims of National Socialism, we remember that on this day, 65 years ago, the sun came out once more for the first time after 6 years of darkness. The first rays of sunlight revealed the scale of devastation endured by my people. On this day, smoke could still be seen above the crematoriums, and blood and ashes covered the Auschwitz-Birkenau camp. The railway tracks had fallen silent. The ramp where the selection of new arrivals took place was deserted. A deceptive silence spread in this valley of horrific murder. The ear perceived only silence, but from the depths of the frozen earth, a heart-wrenching scream emerged and rose to the heavens that were silent and indifferent. The 27th of January 1944 came too late. 6 million Jews had already lost their lives. This day not only means that we pay tribute to those who were murdered, not only symbolizes the feelings of guilt of humankind in light of these unfathomable acts of terror, but also the tragedy of the failure to act. This is the lesson which we draw from a time when the world was in flames and so distracted that the murderous machine could continue to work undisturbed day in, day out, year out. 3 years earlier, on January 20th, 1942, a group of high-ranking officers and public servants met nearby in the Villa am Wannsee on the shores of this beautiful lake. They met under the leadership of Reinhard Heydrich in order to discuss the final solution of the Jewish question, organize it, and to implement it. Adolf Eichmann diligently worked on a document to list the target population destined to persecution and extermination. This encompassed the entire Jewish population of Europe, from the 3 million Polish, Ukrainian, and Soviet Jews to the mere 200 who lived in the small country of Albania. 11 million Jews were sentenced to death. The Nazis worked efficiently, and the path led directly from the Villa am Wannsee to the gas chambers and crematoriums of Auschwitz. On this day of remembrance, I stand before you today, ladies and gentlemen, leaders and representatives of a different, a democratic Germany, as a valuable Germany. And I stand before you as a representative of the Jewish state, the state of survivors, the state of Israel. I am fully aware of the gravity and the emotional significance of the session, and I hope and I am confident you feel the same. In my mind's eye, I see the awe-inspiring figure of my grandfather, whom I admired very much, Rabbi Zvi Melzer, a dignified and handsome man. I was his favorite grandson. He was my teacher and my educator. He taught me the Torah. I remember seeing him standing in front of me with his white beard and his dark eyebrows, wearing his prayer shawls among all the other worshippers in the synagogue in my hometown of Wisniewa in Belarus. At the time, I also wrapped myself in the prayer shawl of my grandfather and listened to his beautiful, clear voice. I can still hear the echo of his voice, the Kol Nidre prayer on the Day of Atonement, in the hours and moments in which, according to Jewish faith, the Almighty determines the fate of all people, whether they shall live or die. I remember seeing him on the platform from which the train departed that took me, the 11-year-old boy, from our village to Eretz Israel. I remember his strong, exuberant embrace, and I remember his last words with which he told me, "My son, always remain a Jew." The locomotive whistled and the train departed. I followed my grandfather through the window until he disappeared from sight. That was the last time I saw him. When the Nazis invaded Wisniewo, they ordered all Jews to gather in the synagogue. My grandfather was the first to go, wrapped in the same prayer shawl I had worn as a child. His whole family joined him. The doors were locked from the outside and the wooden building was set on fire. All that remained of the entire congregation was smoldering ashes and smoke. No one survived. Ladies and gentlemen, the Shoah raises very difficult questions on the very soul of man. How evil can human beings be? How paralyzed an entire people, a people so wholly dedicated to culture and philosophy? What kind of atrocities is man able to commit? Can he turn off his moral compass, turn off reason? How can a people regard itself as the master race and fellow human beings as without value? Up to this day, we're faced with the question as to why the Nazis regarded the Jews as such a danger and threat. What led them to invest so much in this industry of death? Why did the Nazis pursue their plan until the bitter end, although defeat was already looming on the horizon? Did the Jews pose a threat to the thousand-year Reich? How should a persecuted people, crushed by the boots of the perpetrators, stop the murderous, belligerent Nazis? How many divisions did the European Jews have? How many tanks, fighter jets? How many guns? Ladies and gentlemen, anti-Semitism alone is no explanation for the Nazis' hatred. Anti-Semitism is an overused phrase and no explanation for the murderous, brutish enthusiasm, the morbid determination of the Nazi regime to extinguish the Jewish people. The real purpose of war was to exert power over Europe, rather than the desire to settle a historic score with the Jews. And if we Jews were such a dangerous threat in the eyes of the Hitler regime, certainly we were no military threat, but a moral threat. It was the negation of the belief that all men are created equal in the image of God, and all human beings are equal in God's eyes. Even without weapons, a Jew will defend God's sacred name. Since the beginning of its existence, the Jewish people has been committed to the commandments, "Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt love thy neighbor like thyself, and seek peace and pursue it under all circumstances and everywhere." In my mind's eye, I see my grandfather, the faithful Jew who believes in these commandments, the most decent and most valuable and honest man I've ever known. The Nazis wanted to dehumanize him. They burned him and his brothers alive. The flames devoured their bodies, but not their spirit. The Nazis tried to depict us Jews in their horrible propaganda films and in the Stürmer newspaper as parasites, cave rats, and spreaders of disease. Their aim was to forget the values of justice and mercy and banish them into oblivion. As a Jew, I will forever be marked by my pain and mourning for my deceased brothers and sisters. As Israeli, I am mourning the tragic delay in the founding of the State of Israel that left my people without a place of refuge. As a grandfather, I cannot cope with the loss of 1.5 million children. Without the loss of this tremendous human potential, Israel's future would have been a different one. I am proud that we are the arch enemies of Nazi crimes. And I am proud of the legacy of our ancestors, the exact opposite of the Nazis' racial ideology. I am proud that the State of Israel was established, which is the moral and historic answer to the attempt to wipe the Jewish people off of the face of the earth. I thank God the Almighty for all those peoples who put an end to this madness, the evil, and the atrocities. The Shoah must be a constant sign of warning to the human conscience, a commitment to the sacredness of life, to equality of all people, to freedom and peace. Nazi Germany's murder of the European Jews must not be regarded as an astronomical black hole, devouring light and the past together with the future. The Shoah, however, must also not let us stop believing in the good, in hope, in life. Today, on the International Day of Remembrance for the Victims of National Socialism, I ask myself how the European Jews would have wanted us to remember them. Only through the smoke of the crematoriums? Shouldn't we also recall their lives before the Shoah? If the millions of Jews in Europe had one collective voice, this voice would urge us and everyone else to look to the future, to achieve what these victims could have achieved had they not been robbed of this opportunity, to create anew what we lost as a result of their deaths. Just take as an example the creative spirit of the German Jews, who identified with their homeland and their contribution to culture, science, the economy, and to Germany as a whole, which was so significant that it was far greater than would have been expected given the actual size of the Jewish community. It is well known that the European Jews tremendously enriched the sciences, technology, economy, literature, and the arts of this continent. After being expelled from their homeland, they became a knowledgeable nomadic people of craftsmen and multilingual merchants. A people of doctors, authors, academics, and artists. A people that was blessed with personalities who enriched German culture and the entire world. I am overwhelmed to think of the many philosophers and inventors who left the Jewish villages, the Jewish ghettos, and the Jewish bourgeoisie for the universities as soon as they were granted access to them. As if by magic, Albert Einstein, Sigmund Freud, Martin Buber, Karl Marx, Hermann Cohen, Hannah Arendt, Heinrich Heine, and Moses Mendelssohn, Rosa Luxemburg, Walter Rathenau, Stefan Zweig, and Walter Benjamin came to prominence. Despite their differences, they were united by their contribution, which should not be underestimated, to human knowledge, and they're united by their extraordinary influence on modernity. They made Europe, Germany, indeed the whole world, look to a new future. And now to the most important lesson of all. Never again a racial ideology. Never again a sense of superiority. Never again an allegedly God-given justification to persecute, to murder, to place oneself above the law. Never again should God and the Shoah be denied. We must never again ignore ruthless dictators who hide behind demagogic masks and utter murderous slogans. My friends, representatives of the German people, the democratic people, the threats to eliminate our people and our state are approaching from the shadow of weapons of mass destruction, weapons that are in the hands of irrational people, people who are not of sound mind, and mouths that do not speak the truth. In order to prevent a second Shoah, it is up to us to teach our children to respect human life and to preserve peace with our and other countries. The young generation must learn to respect each and every culture, but also universal values. The Ten Commandments must always be passed on. Let us bring light into the darkness. Let us use telescopes and microscopes to decipher the secrets of science which can heal the human body and spirit. We need food for the hungry, water for the thirsty, air to breathe, and wisdom for humankind. At the end of the British Mandate, David Ben-Gurion, who paved the way for the rebirth of the nation, proclaimed the State of Israel. The Arabs rejected the United Nations resolution and attacked Israel. And thus, the State of Israel was attacked within hours of his proclamation by seven Arab armies seeking to destroy it almost before it had come into being. We faced them alone. We had no allies, and yet were the Jewish last hope for security. Had we lost this war, this would have perhaps been and meant the end of our people. The Israeli army won this hopeless battle that united historic justice and human courage. Holocaust survivors who had only just reached the safe shores of Israel, and they fought in the ranks of the Israeli armed forces and joined the other soldiers in battle. Some died on the front lines. While still recovering from the war, the small country, already as its first priority, started to open its doors to Holocaust survivors and the many Jewish refugees from Arab countries. All other doors remained closed to them. Ladies and gentlemen, we still clearly remember how, at the time when our wounds were still fresh, we received unexpected assistance from the new Germany. Two historic figures reached out to each other across the abyss. Chancellor Konrad Adenauer, the founding father of the Democratic Federal Republic, and David Ben-Gurion, founder and first Prime Minister of the State of Israel. On September 27, 1951, Chancellor Adenauer delivered a speech in the German Bundestag. He talked about the responsibility of the German people for the crimes of the Third Reich, its responsibility towards the Jewish people, and the willingness of his government to compensate the Jewish people for the expropriation of their property and to support the fledgling state in its reconstruction efforts. The Israeli government's decision to negotiate directly with the German government resulted in an unprecedented wave of protests among the Jews. Survivors with tattoos from the death camps threw stones at the Israeli parliament, but there were also others who supported David Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion stood by his decision and said, "There is another Germany with which we must talk about the future and not only the past." The Knesset reluctantly agreed with a heavy heart. Germany's reparations helped Israel to recover and were an essential contribution to the swift development of the country. Back then, as a young man, I had the honor of being and becoming Ben-Gurion's assistant and later his deputy in the Ministry of Defense. I learned that it is Israel's obligation to protect its children, although we were still in the process of rebuilding our country. In this respect, too, Germany understood us and supplied us with means of defending ourselves. We thank you for that. A unique friendship has since evolved between Israel and Germany. However, this friendship does not lead us to forget the Shoah. Rather, we are aware of the darkness which hung over the valley of death in the past, also in light of our joint, clear decision to look forward, to hope on the horizon and a better world. The bridge across the abyss was built with aching hands and shoulders that could barely bear the weight of our memories. It is built on strong moral foundations. We have built a living memorial dedicated to our brothers and sisters who were murdered. In the shape of the plows that turn desert into fertile plantations, the laboratories that discover new life, the weapons that protect us and our uncompromising democracy. We were and are convinced that this new Germany will do all that is expected of it to make sure that the Jewish state will never be forced to face a threat alone. Cruel and arrogant dictatorships should never again be allowed to rear their evil heads. From Konrad Adenauer, who found a common language together with David Ben-Gurion, to Willy Brandt's kneeling in honor of the heroes of the Warsaw Ghetto, and you, members of the Bundestag and the Bundesrat, from Helmut Schmidt to Helmut Kohl and other leaders, you have strengthened these foundations and continued to build up this friendship. Supportive institutions, economic actors, cultural institutes, thinkers, decision makers, all have enriched this extraordinary friendship. Thank you once again. You, Federal President Köhler, said in the Knesset in Jerusalem, the responsibility for the Shoah is part of the German identity. We hold you in high esteem for that. And you, Chancellor Angela Merkel, won our hearts with your honesty and warmth. You told the American Congress that an attack on Israel is equivalent to an attack on Germany. We will never forget these moving words of steadfast support. Ladies and gentlemen, almost 62 years have passed since the founding of the State of Israel. We survived the crucial test of 9 wars. We have forged 2 peace agreements with Egypt and Jordan. To those countries with which we live in peace, we have returned all the territories we gained during the wars. Our soil does not easily lend itself to cultivation, and yet we have succeeded in developing an agricultural sector that is among the best in the world. Instead of natural resources, we have technological and scientific know-how that places us among the best in research and science, and that recompensates us for the small size of our country. Our people came from the diaspora on every continent. Today, the majority of Jews live in Israel. We have returned to our language. We are the only country in our region to speak the same ancient language as our ancestors 3,000 years ago, Hebrew, the language of the Old Testament. Jewish history continues to be based on 2 pillars. Firstly, the ethics, which is enshrined in the Ten Commandments, a document which was written around 3,500 years ago and which it has never been necessary to amend. It is part of the foundations of Western culture. And on the other hand, science, with the purpose of discovering the secrets which are hidden to the human eye and which have the potential to change our lives. Israel is a Jewish and a democratic state. Approximately 1.5 million Arab citizens live here with equal rights. We will not allow discrimination against anyone because of his or her nationality or religion. Our culture is as modern as it is traditional. Israel has a living democracy. It never stagnates, and even in times of war, life continues. Our victories, however, have not put an end to the threats. We do not seek territories which do not belong to us, and we have no interest in ruling over another people, yet we cannot afford to close our eyes. Our national aim is clear and unequivocal: peace with our neighbors. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that Israel agrees with the principle of two states for two peoples. We have paid a price in war and have no hesitation in paying a price for peace. We remain willing to give up territories to make peace with the Palestinians. They should be enabled to establish their own state, an independent, a prosperous, and peace-loving state. Like our neighbors, we too identify with the millions of Iranians who are rebelling against dictatorship and violence. Like them, we oppose a fanatic regime that disregards the Charter of the United Nations, a regime that issues threats of destruction and possesses nuclear power plants and nuclear missiles, which it uses to terrorize its own country and others. Such a regime poses a threat to the entire world. We are happy that Germany clearly opposed it. We want to learn from the European Union. You, who have liberated the continent from 1,000 years of war and suffering, and who have enabled young people to replace their ancestors' hatred with solidarity among the younger generation. We can learn a lot from your experiences and want to dream of a Middle East where all countries are willing to renounce the conflict of the parents in favor of peace for the children. We want to establish a modern regional economy to confront the current problems we all face. Diseases, terrorism, the God in whom we all have faith is the God of peace, not the God of war. Ladies and gentlemen, I stand before you today in the firm belief that it is in your and our power to change the course of history. In my view, peace is within reach. Threats against Israel will not deter us. I stand before you today as the son of a people that is willing to do everything in its power to create a better world, a world in which all human beings recognize each other's humanity. The International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of the Holocaust is a day of prayer and reflection and hope. I started with the Kaddish prayer and would like to end with our national anthem, the Hatikvah, the Hope. Our hope is not yet lost, the hope of 2,000 years to be a free people in our land, the land of Zion and Jerusalem. We dare to dream this dream, and I am convinced that you will dare to dream it with us. Together, we can make this dream a reality. This is our beginning, this is our obligation to the younger generation. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you all for your attention.